It's a joy to be with you this morning. I look out at the audience, and one of the things I think about is 2 years ago, as COVID restrictions were imposed and had some unusual person thought from wherever they came from that we needed to set the church building on fire in a literal sense, and then they came in and then had to hazmat everything and clean everything up, and the restrictions shut down, we could have seven people here, and all the pews were set aside, and it was concrete, and so I look out and say, wow, we were back, as I mentioned the other week, that we only missed the Sunday of the time that the person set the fire. Outside of that, we're here to serve the Lord. And this morning is one part as we go along that I started in the book of Ecclesiastes, and this morning will be in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. But I want to ask you, we live in a society of abundance. We have the media that shows the extreme abundance that some people have. Elon Musk, $312 billion, $312,000 million. It's just staggering. And so, what if you could have everything, anything that you want? Would happiness increase? Would you be twice as happy if you were twice as rich? Would you be four times as happy if you were four times as rich? And it just go on exponentially that way. What would that be? Would you be happier if you had everything? And Oscar Wilde, an Irish poet playwright, said, there's only two tragedies in life. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting it. What does that mean? Well, if you don't get what you want, unhappiness might be blamed on, well, I'd really be happy if I had this other thing or situation or condition or place or whatever it is. But the problem is, sometimes people get that other thing, and they're still not happy. Now what do you blame it on? And so you think about this. If you had a choice to be rich but become sad your whole life, or be poor and happy, which would you choose? Most people say, you know, man, I don't want to be sad my whole life. I'll take just the modest living and go along that way. Well, if you got your Bibles, think about this. As we look at this lesson, what if you had everything? What if you could live on a beautiful, let's say, South Pacific island? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great to vacation there? Well, Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 1, I thought in my heart, come now and I will test you with pleasure to find out what's good. But that also proved to be meaningless. I said, laughter, it's foolish. I thought, well, man, I don't know if I feel that way. I like to laugh. I like to have a good time. And so I began thinking about things. Well, what if it was you and you could be on this island? Man, almost everyone, Glenda might not like to go there because she reacts to heat. And so, hey, heat, cold, let's just have a good time. And so Solomon is going to say, let's talk about pleasure. If we had more of fun things, how much happier would we be in that situation? Well, as we looked at a couple weeks ago in Ecclesiastes 1, the reality is without God, without purpose in life, what does anything matter? And so, well, and I thought about things that I really like. Now, you'll have your own list of, well, it's not what Paul chose, but I like this thing, and think about those things. So I chose a little handful of things that appealed to me. I love extreme roller coasters. Several years ago, we went back to Ohio in Sandusky, Cedar Point. Joe Pisano, who grew up in Avon Lake, just outside of Cleveland. Oh, yeah. You went to Cedar Point? And oh, yeah. And so now they got the extreme roller coasters, top thrill dragsters. You get in it, 0 to 120, boom, 3.8 seconds, and then straight up. And then over the top and straight down. It's just awesome. And so went there, and how was that for you? Well, we got our hotel just right outside the park. And so it was a 5-minute walk, and we're in. And so, man, I'm all about roller coasters. So I'm riding extreme roller coasters, me and Jeff Dillinger and Kim and the ones that Glenda wanted, she rode. And it was great. And lunchtime came. They wanted to eat lunch and take a nap. I didn't want to quit riding roller coasters. So I kept riding. They went to the apartment. They went to sleep. They come back. I'm still riding roller coasters. People said, by yourself? I said, absolutely. Well, there's other people there. And we're doing it as fast as I could get from the gate back around outside and back to the gate again. Man, over and over and over and over. 5 hours. Whew. Man, that was great. Paul, wouldn't you like to do that every day? Wouldn't that make you happier? No, I don't want to do that every day. That's good every once in a while, but I wouldn't be happier after a while. It's kind of, yeah, but you know, there's ones that are faster than that. The Formula Rosa goes 149 miles an hour. It's in Ferrari World in Abu Dhabi, United Emirates. Well, man, it'd be nice to go 150 miles an hour, boom, and you're shot out. But, you know, when you think about that, I mean, that's nice, but depending on what you compare it to. Blue Origin's rocket, you know, now you can buy a ticket, get on a rocket, and they'll shoot you up. You know, here you got Star Trek, and man, we got taking football stars and news commentators into space. Yeah, but that's suborbital. And you get to spend 10 minutes and then you're back down to Earth. Well, that'd be nice. But that's not the big deal. In fact, to do that, they're anticipating the cost in the short run. You could do it for about $400,000 for 10 minutes. No, I don't spend that much. But that's not really as cool as what you could do. That there's another space company involved in tourism, Axiom, that is flying 3 people early next year to the International Space Station. The SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule. And you get to stay up there for 8 nights in the space station. Wow. Man, that's way better than a roller coaster. And it only cost $55 million for the week because it's $35,000 per night on the space station. But then you got to get your ticket going up there and, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and all this. And so you look at those things, Paul, is that what you're going to do? No, I'm not going to do that. I ride roller coasters just as it makes me joyful for that period of time. Well, I tell you something else I like. I like campfires and roasting marshmallows. Yeah, but what if somebody said, but that's what you get for the rest of your life? What do you mean? I mean, that's it. Every day you build a campfire and what you got to eat is marshmallows. That's it? That's it. Man, I wouldn't choose that routine. I'd like other things. I like marshmallows, but I want something else, not just marshmallows. I like salmon fishing. But what if somebody said, if you do it, you got to do it every day the rest of your life and every single day and nothing else? Then I don't want to do it. I like, Jim and I went a couple months ago out on the mouth of the Columbia and catching king salmon. It was great. But the reality is, I don't want to do it every single day. Now, as you look at that island, wouldn't you like to be there? But let me ask you. You could walk that island in 5 minutes end to end at a slow stroll. It'd take you 3 minutes to go side to side. What if somebody said, you get to go there, but you have to stay there and can never leave it the rest of your life. Oh, man. My brother lived in an island in the Virgin Islands. It was St. Thomas. Absolutely beautiful. Well, then later on, a hurricane struck, blew everything off. It was ugly as dirt. But he made a comment. He lived there for 40 years. And he says, the next time I move, I want it to be someplace interesting, not just beautiful. And so there's fun to go places, but would you want to stay there if that was it? And what Solomon said is, man, what I found out is, you know, that wasn't as happy long term as I thought it would be. Or what about laugh? I love to laugh. Glenn and I, we tease each other during the day. I'd like to laugh every day. But that's only a part, small part of what we do. Think about what we do now. We read the funny papers. How often do you laugh reading the funny papers? You know, once in a while, there's something you chuckle. And that's about it. But the reality is, does laughing change people's lives permanently? One joke. No. And so Solomon said, let's take a look at life. What if you had everything? Just the things that are joyful to us, if you had to do it every day and nothing else, it's no longer fun. Well, what if you had everything? What if it wasn't just pleasure, but what if it was stuff? Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 4 through 8, I enlarged my works, I built houses for myself, I planted vineyards for myself, and verse 5, and gardens and parks and ponds of water to irrigate a forest of growing trees. And I bought male and female slaves. You say, oh, I would never do that. You already have done it. You call it appliances. What is washing the dishes now? We put dishes in an appliance that does all the washing. And you probably not many of you women take all your clothes down to the river and beat it on a rock and hang it on a line. You take the clothes, you throw it in one appliance, it does the washing, you take it out, you throw it in the other one, it does the drying. You have one, you punch some buttons probably on the wall, and it heats and cools your house throughout the winter and summer at the temperature that you like it. You don't actually have somebody fanning you, but you have fans, you have heaters and cooling. You have microwaves. You put something in a little box, punch the button, and 45 seconds later it's done. We are surrounded by things that make our lives so much easier. Solomon said, I had all those things. Well, let's talk about possessions. What if you had a bigger house? What if it was twice as big? What if it was 15 times as big? What if you have to fill it with all furniture and then pay people to clean it and gardeners to watch over all the stuff? And then you got to have security personnel because every third person is trying to bump you off and steal it or hold you for ransom or whatever it be. Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 8, he said, I collected for myself silver and gold and treasure of kings. I provided for myself male and female singers. We got that. You call it TV. Here's, America's Got Talent and DVD players and your iPhones. And so anytime you want music, you got it. We got what he had. And he said, the pleasures of men, many concubines. Wouldn't that solve problems? Husbands, how about this? What if you had 1,000 wives? Wouldn't that make life simple? One wife looks at Diane, looks at Vince, yeah. No. But it seems like, wow, wouldn't that be spectacular? Think about all the infighting and bitterness and loneliness and intrigue and all this and that. Solomon had 700 wives, 300 concubines. Even if you visited them all regularly, every 3 years, you got to visit with one day. And wow. But that's not how it was. They were just put away and guarded, and you didn't get even to interact with the outside world. And so what about that? In Ecclesiastes 2 and 11, Solomon said, I considered all my activities and the labor I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind. Well, I wouldn't think so. I mean, if you have Bill Gates's mansion and Elon Musk's money and, all the guards and all the cleaning people and all the security and all the computers and all the that you want, He said, I got it. And that didn't bring happiness. Well, that got me to thinking. And I thought, wow. I don't understand. It would seem like that if you have more of everything, that you're happier in all these different ways. But the answer seems to be not so. The problem is, it's selfish. If that's the focus, more stuff doesn't bring more happiness. Acts 20:35, here is where Jesus is quoted, it's more blessed to give than receive. Now, the older you get, the more sensible that makes. The fun stuff is being able to bless others and give. So I did some additional research. I thought, well, people might say, well, yeah, Paul, that's kind of Bible stuff, but I don't know if that's the real world. It wouldn't be that way with me. And so as I did research this week on this, one individual interviewed 21 billionaires over the course of 6 years all over the world. Guess what the result is? That money itself didn't change much about your ability to be happy. It just magnifies your personality. If you're stingy and miserable and negative and selfish, more money doesn't make you happier, joyous, and giving. It makes you more bitter, internal, stingy, mean. If a person already is happy and giving, that just gives you more opportunity to give. You say, well, yeah, but that's 21. You know, maybe that's really not so. A study, a Harvard study of 4,000 millionaires recorded on Inc.com said the more we have of it, the more money wears off. Research by Nobel laureates Daniel Kahneman and Angus Deaton suggests that happiness increased as income increases up to the point of $75,000. You say, man, I'd like to make that. But he said, let me tell you, once you're there, it doesn't matter much. They said, beyond that point, it's likely it doesn't exert a large impact on people's ability to live comfortably. As the researchers wrote, and Andrew Carnegie came up with one solution. He donated the vast majority of his fortune to charities and foundations and universities during the last years of his life, keeping it from his heirs in an apparent attempt to lead them to useful, worthy lives rather than just laying around and being lazy bums. And this writer says, as his solution has greater wisdom as well, because research shows that giving to others leads to greater happiness than spending on oneself. Carnegie was also employing his wealth in a manner likely to maximize his own happiness. That's where the fun comes. That's where the joys come. When somebody else is hurting, when somebody else is in trouble, when somebody else is really facing major, major things, and you say, you know, I know a way that maybe we could help this out a little bit. And so when I was doing this lesson, I was preparing it, and I'm looking here in Ecclesiastes 2, I was kind of restless because Solomon kept saying, when I made this for myself, when I got this for myself, when I got that for myself, I got restless with that. I said, look, I don't have a lot of space on this slide, so I'm going to not emphasize that. And then after I read the research done of millionaires and billionaires, I thought, wow, Solomon was saying it right then. So look back here. Now I've highlighted it in yellow. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I didn't do this for homeless people. I didn't do this for poor people. I need a summer palace and a winter palace. And, you know, I need new fountains. And I planted vineyards for myself. And gardens and parks for myself. I thought, there it is. That's why the stuff didn't bring happiness. Ponds of water to irrigate a forest of trees. And I bought male and female slaves. In 2:8, he said, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings. I provided for myself male and female singers. That's why it was. He said, why didn't more bring more happiness? Because he tried to meet that internal pain, that internal need, by I get it all. And he says, that's not how it works. That you have enough to take care of yourself and those you love. And then, who can I help? Who can I give it away to? And so think about that in our lives. So Solomon said, what I found is just seeking pleasure doesn't make me happier. Just seeking possessions didn't make me happier. What if I was smarter? It's, oh man, I'd like to be, wouldn't you like to be smarter? I'd like to be smarter. How much smarter? Oh, twice as smart. 15 times would be better. Just whatever. And because my brother was brilliant, you know, and I was just the average delinquent, you know, I didn't count for much. And so Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 2:12, so I turned to consider wisdom. And he said, now, there is a principle there to take a look at. And so smarter is better. Really? Will smarter make you happier, though? And so what he says, now, usually I use New American Standard or New International Version because they're more accurate to the text. I chose this paraphrase version because the words they choose kind of help us look through a different window on this. So this is taken not from New American Standard, but the Message version. In 2:13, it paraphrases and says, but I did see that it's better to be smart than stupid, just as light is better than darkness. That is, smart doesn't necessarily make you happier, but it's way better than being an idiot. And so he said, that's the thing that I have learned. And again, the message cites in verse 15, I realized that my fate is the same as the fool's. I had to work, I had to ask myself, so why bother being wise? He says, it's smoke. New American Standard says, it's vanity. He said, it's smoke, nothing but smoke. As steam rises from cooking or fog from the ground, and you look at it, oh yeah, and it's gone. It really doesn't mean much. Well, the reality is, it's better to be smart, but just increasing intelligence does not necessarily increase the happiness coefficient. In fact, what we find is that it's not limited to, but a lot of times people with very high IQs, Albert Einstein was 170, Stephen Hawking was 160, that it's harder to make friends. Why? Because you have intellectual isolation. Nobody else knows how to talk to you. And certain talking on a deep level for them, you know, and talking just the average stuff here, they feel like they're not understood. And reality isn't enough. Trivialities, sometimes just the everyday stuff isn't inherently satisfying. And so that decreases their happiness. Or maybe they have an idealistic view of the world. They're, wait a minute, they shouldn't have all these shootings and all this crazy. Yeah, but you do. Yeah, but... And rather than just saying, that's the way you live in a crazy world. Or more pressure to succeed. Look how smart you are. How come you aren't, you know, curing cancer and COVID, you know, by snapping your fingers? Or mental illness. Many scientific works confirm that intellectuals often suffer from mental disorder. Certainly it's not limited to them, but lots of homeless people do. In fact, it's estimated 26% of Americans have some form of diagnosable mental illness in any given year. Well, where do you go with that? Well, we kind of think as if I could do more fun things, I would absolutely had more money to do it, I'd be happier. And the Bible says that humans say, no, you really don't. You get a spot where, yeah, you're kind of satiated, you're satisfied. Well, if I had more stuff, would that do it? No. If I was just 11 times smarter, would that do it? No. I came across a story a long time ago. I guess it's just made up, but a guy was driving through the country and had a tire shop work on one of the tires. But as he went along, the lug nuts fell off of one of the tires. And tire rolled a little bit and fell over, and all the lug nuts were gone over the miles. He had no idea where they were. And so he's out there trying to figure, what am I going to do? I can't put on a spare. I mean, I got a tire, but I don't have any lug nuts to put on it. And he looked up, and there was a mental institution here on the hill and a barbed wire fence around and a guy at the fence looking down at the guy working on his truck, on his car. And the guy behind the fence says, I got an idea. Are you interested? He said, well, yeah. What's your idea? He said, why don't you take one lug nut off the other three tires and put it on the one where you're missing your tire. You can get into town and I'll take care of it. He said, wow, that's a tremendous idea. He said, but I don't understand. Isn't that a mental institution? Yeah. He said, well, how come somebody as smart as you is there? He said, I'm here because I'm crazy, but I'm not stupid. And so you have that kind of balance in life. And so we think, if I was just smarter, that would solve all the problems. Not necessarily. And so Solomon sees this in 2:17. He says, all is meaningless and a chasing after wind. And I hated all things I had toiled for because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows if he'll be a wise man or a fool. So I've worked and worked and worked and got all this stressed and strained and got it. But what do I know it'll happen? And guess what? What was his son like? Boom, blew up. And so it happens that way with sometimes with heirs of very rich people. And they're just tragically unhappy. They grew up in families where wealth surrounded them. But they were insecure. Seven marriages, gambling addiction, and the Woolworth heiress lost what's equivalent of $900 million. Just come on. So he says, you know, I tell you, the issue is not just pleasure, it's not possessions, and it's not being smarter. 2:23, he says, all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Well, how would you like, now you got to worry about it's all going to dissipate or somebody's stealing it or your bookkeeper. Mercy. We generally don't have that problem. There's enough. We got food, we got a house, and clothing and so forth. But we just don't worry about but what am I going to do with my $300 billion? I don't know that life would be better if I had it. Solomon said, that doesn't make for happiness. So what if you had everything? Ecclesiastes 2:24 said, there's nothing better than for a man to eat and drink and tell himself his labor is good. Enjoy what you're doing during the day. And he said, this also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. And so we talk about sometimes just be in the moment. Enjoy the moment. Paul, are you enjoying what you're doing right now? Absolutely. We're talking about great principles that affect all of us. And some people think, oh, if it was only this other way, then I'd be happy. And Solomon said, I was there. And that's not what does it. And so, what about this? As we look at it, how to be happier every day, including today. What they say is, the study says, smile more. Proverbs 15, verse 13. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. They say, now, if you work in a job, you have to smile all day long, whether you feel like it or not. People come home exhausted. But when you genuinely smile, it releases the endorphins, the feel-good chemicals, and you feel better just for having smiled. Hey, all right, good to see you. And think about smiles. Sometimes we've seen it in the movies. I don't often see it in people in every day, where they say, their lips are smiling, but not their eyes. Here's this little, but their eyes are just cold and beady on that. And that is, a real smile affects your eyes. Kind of they squint down a little bit. You're really happy, and people read that in you. And so think about this. I say, oh, you know what? I want to smile more and have adequate sleep. And Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 12 said, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. So you work hard all day, go to sleep. man, maybe I didn't have lobster and all the trimmings there. We had a burrito. Oh man, it was great. Then we had salsa. It's just everyday stuff. But the reality is, how'd you sleep last night? Oh, I had a great night's sleep. And so you feel good, ready to go the next day, because adequate sleep really affects and improves our responses to other things, like negative emotions that might come from fear or anger. You say, oh, I feel better, and we're ready to go. Enjoy time with your friends and family. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9. Enjoy life with the woman you love all the days of your fleeting life. And so I love to tease. I'll tease Glinda, and she teases back, by the way. She'll get out her cup. We're going to have tea or breakfast and going to have some eggs. And she turns the refrigerator to get something, and I'm hiding it someplace. And she just come back and, all right, where is it, this or that? And she does the same for me, takes my phone and moves it from where I thought it was. Now I'm going up and down and can't find it. Or I'm going to go through a door and she locks it. What? Every day it's fun to laugh. It's joyful to interact with one another. But I do the same thing with grandkids. You know, I'm hiding stuff on them at the dinner table, and I go down to Colorado, and here's a one granddaughter. She's got her silverware there, and I'm hiding under the napkins, or she gets herself a plate or a bowl of whatever we're having for breakfast, goes to get the milk, and I'm hiding the food somewhere else. And so we're just enjoying life. We're in the moment. And so think about that. It's not just about, oh, what the world problems. The world's going to have those problems. You make your life as joyous as you know how. And in the process, help others. Galatians 6:10, do good unto all men, especially those of the household of faith. So sometimes people just need help. They're stuck maybe with a project around the house or a project on their business, and they need help. You say, I know how to get that solved. I know some people that know how to do that. I can do this little part of it. Acts chapter 10 and verse 38, Jesus went about doing good. And so how can I help others? How can I bless them on the job, in the neighborhood, in the congregation? And think about giving lovingly. We had on the screen during the collection for the contribution that give and it shall be given to you, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant and they're dipping up food for you, and it's this little dab of this and that, and you think, oh man, that's really not adequate. Another time, boy, they're just abundant with it. God said, I want to bless you. And we're so pleased to have Joe and Laura and their family with us. Now you say, Paul, when you say that as far as giving, well, you need to pay off the building. Building's paid off. We don't need money for that. Well, Paul, you're looking for a raise. No, I've told people for, I don't know, maybe 6 years, we're fine. Don't need a raise. Let's use money for blessing others, helping young families, people that are challenged. What can we do with funds to bless other people? So it's just joyous in that situation. And then that aspect of gratitude. Study after study shows that the more thankful people are, the more joyous they are in all areas of their life. 1 Thessalonians 5 in verses 15 down through 18. He says, rejoice always, and then in everything give thanks. What if we every day thought about or wrote down, if you like, three neat things that happen? Man, I woke up this morning feeling good. We drove down here. We talked about spiritual things. I see a bunch of believers here together. It's just fun being together. It is joyous. Share that with others. So where we started this morning was, what if we had everything? And the answer is we do. We have everything that's important. We have God. We have salvation. We have one another. We have enough to provide food and shelter and some to help others with. in Ephesians chapter 1 and in verse 3, God, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessings in the heavenly places in Christ. I'd like you to think about that. We're going to offer an invitation this morning. And so if you'd like to change your life, you say, well, I would like to be baptized into Christ. I believe in Jesus Christ. I'm willing to repent of my sins, make those changes that are necessary to do, to confess him and to be buried in the waters of baptism. I had the joy of talking to Ron Swift. And as he and Regina were over to our house yesterday, that Ron would like to be baptized into Christ this morning. Jim, I've got three things for you to do. If you do them now and get all three of them done, if you'd go in at the breaker box, turn off the heater so everybody stays safe, turn on the light for the baptistry, and raise the screen. If you'd do that now, and I got just another thing or two to say. Kathy and Rebecca, if you take out your phone additionally and you can video the baptism. It's just been such a joy to get to know and interact with Ron and Regina. Ron's parents were Christians. He lost his mother, his father, and his aunt this year. And so it causes people to look at life and say, maybe I need to look more thoughtfully at the direction I'm taking. And he said, I think it's time. And so, Ron, man, we are so thrilled at that. Just so happy for you. He had said, and I'll just share a thought or two. Before his mom passed away, she said, when I get to heaven, I want to have a little talk with Jesus. And after that, I want to go find your father. Man, isn't that great if you have family setting an example like that? And the dad, I guess it said in his younger years, you know, don't get baptized till you're ready. Before his dad passed away, he said something like, Ron, I think it's time. So for all of us, we get to a spot, it makes sense to make a change in our lives. And so if you're here and as we sing this invitation song, Ron, we'd like to ask you to come forward and join us here toward the front pew. And anybody else that said, look, I'd appreciate prayers. I'd like to be baptized in Christ as well. We have jumpsuits you can change into and towels you can dry off with. And so it's so good to be together. We're so thankful to God, so appreciative to Ron. And Vince, why don't you lead us in a song, The Battle Belongs. No, you want the screen up?
Well, do you need it up for the
back? Yes.
Let's just sing
songbook
old school.
And so it'll be, if you get your songbooks.
I'll raise it when you get it.
And number 977.